Hello and welcome to the final post-game edition of 2023 of the Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. And Audrey, we've watched that game 12 other times this year.
Yeah, more of the same. Penn State fans did not get the ending they wanted in the Peach Bowl. The weird statistic of Penn State winning every New Year's Six game will not be coming true. Penn State now is 0-1 all-time in the Peach Bowl after losing to Ole Miss 38-25. This really wasn't much of a game either. I mean, by midway through the third quarter, it felt like this thing was done.
Which is really interesting because I thought, you know, after the first drive of the game, Penn State's first drive of the game, I should say, I thought they were going to move the ball, right? Like, I thought they were going to be able to run and they were going to be able to score with relative ease. And they stalled out, settled for a field goal, and that was kind of it the rest of the way, right? Like, they couldn't come back from there. Before we get too far into it, though, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button down below. Hit the subscribe button. The five-star ratings and reviews always help us out on Apple Podcasts. But no, this is an indictment of the offense, right? Like, I know people will point to the 38 points given up. This was a shell of the Penn State defense we had seen all year. Two starting cornerbacks who were not the team starters all year. Chop Robinson did not play. Adisa Isaac did not play much. Like, this was not the same defense we had seen all season.
Yeah, and I think that's the – and you and I talked about this when we did the pregame pod, John. We said, you know, really win or lose, nothing is going to change about this season because they were going to be so shorthanded. And I think we can a little bit make the argument that they were a little more shorthanded than we even thought, because we knew – they had this plan for Kalen King, right? This plan that James Franklin spoke about earlier this week. Well, apparently the plan was for Kalen King not to play at all, which seems... Now, I did talk to Terry Smith afterward, and I said to him, like, when did you know Kalen King wasn't going to play? And he wouldn't really give me a definitive, like, day or answer. But he said, he's like, well, Kalen was here all week, and he practiced all week, so we're kind of waiting and seeing. So I do think, John, there might be a little bit of a possibility that as the week went on down here in Atlanta, I almost said Orlando, gosh, as the week went on in Orlando, in Atlanta, gosh, I'm fried already, that maybe, you know, this thing kind of played out a little bit differently. Olu Fashanu, as we saw in the pregame availability report, out, did not play a single snap. Adisa Isaac did not play beyond the first series in the second half. So, yeah, this was definitely not the same defense, and it showed. I mean, a defense that came into Saturday, top-ranked unit in college football, giving up an average of 11.4 points per game, gives up 38 to Ole Miss, and credit Jackson Dart, made some really, really nice throws. Their receiving core, their tight end, I thought was spectacular. A lot of acrobatic plays, catches that those guys made. But, yeah, this was not the same Penn State defense. But in many ways, it was the same Penn State offense.
Yeah, real quick on the defense, there were a lot of plays that Johnny Dixon and Kalen King just would have made on the ball against Trey Harris, right? Like that. I mean, I think those were pretty easy to spot. Those plays down the sidelines, when he would get in isolation against them, you're not trying Kalen King, right? You're not trying Johnny Dixon in those situations. And Lane Kiffin kind of said they kind of targeted those guys because they knew that Cam Miller and Elliott Washington and Zion Tracy were new to this. But yeah, this offense was, I don't know, putrid. In the air, right? This was, and honestly, like, then we can boil it down to, okay, they were good against they were good running the ball, right? And the tight ends were pretty good in the passing game, and the running backs were decent in the passing game, and Drew Aller was hitting guys when they were open, and the offensive line held up, although there were a couple breakdowns because Olu Fashanu was not playing in the game despite coming out as one of the first players in full uniform when the team made its entrance onto the field, which I thought was interesting. But I think it comes down to the one thing it's come down to all year, and it's the wide receivers are not good enough.
Yeah, they're clearly, again, we say this, I know we've said it several times on here this year, but it held true, and I think especially against Ole Miss, where you saw their depth, the talent that they have. We knew coming into this game that they had three wide receivers who had been really productive. I don't even think we can say Penn State has one wide receiver that's productive. I mean, it really is jarring. Trey Wallace did come back. I think if you're looking for a bright spot with that receiving core, it starts there, and I might make the argument that it might end there too, at least for now. I think
you kind of have to.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely think there's upside with Amari Evans, but we didn't see it. He got the offensive pass interference penalty today. Keandre Lambert-Smith, just not really a factor.
Complete no show.
Once. Yeah, which has really kind of been the theme down the stretch. One target, which led to one drop if he catches that pass. It's either a first down or very close to it. I think it either would have been like it was right kind of right there from what I'm recalling in my fried recollections here on this Saturday night. But yeah, to me, you have that, and then we got a bigger issue here, John.
Yeah.
We got a no show from Dante Cephas, the guy
who showed up.
Well, not on the field. He was on the sideline, but he did not play a snap.
Yeah, so I asked Marcus Higgins about this after the game, and it was kind of a long, or not even long, but like kind of a winding answer about what happened. He said, guys at practice who can be counted on to do certain things and who gives us the best chance to win when he's talking about playing time decisions. And again, he was asked specifically about Cephas, and he said this, and he said, I know what you guys are asking me, but just trying to focus on accountability of how guys practice and who gives us the best chance to win. Sounds like Dante Cephas did something to not earn that playing time, right? To earn his spot on the bench, which is obviously not a good thing moving forward. They need Dante Cephas next season. It sounds like Dante Cephas is going to come back. I don't know that there was ever a question that he wasn't.
Yeah.
It sounded like it would be news to Higgins if there was any kind of conversation, which brings us to the other player potentially leaving that Higgins was asked about, because this was I thought it was really interesting the different ways that he answered these two questions, right? Mm-hmm. Because when he answered it about Dante Cephas, it was clearly like, we haven't had that kind of conversation. That hasn't been the thing that we've, or a thing that's been brought up. And if it needed to be, I'm sure it would have been brought up. And he was asked earlier about Keandre Lambert-Smith and if he would be back. And he said, quote, I think everybody has to make their own decision on what the future holds, and no one can control that. I think we just have to take it one day at a time. I think right now the focus is just figuring out where to go from here after this loss and how we get better moving forward. Does that sound like someone's coming back?
Not to me, but again, we'll see. I mean, as of Saturday night, there's been nothing from Keandre Lambert-Smith. I know he was asked in the locker room after the game, and he declined all questions. So again, not only are the receivers not showing up on the field, but we have not heard from them in the media room in a long time.
That's right.
Which, you know what, I think this goes back to the accountability piece. And yes, I get it. These are 18 to 22-year-olds. But one of the themes that Jaywon Sider said in that receiving core, he said, you know, in some ways they're young and they have to grow up. But these are two older guys. Like, these are your most veteran guys in this room, and there needs to be leadership and there needs to be accountability. And it just does not seem like there's much of either right now.
Yeah, and you know, I was talking to Jaywon about this, right? This idea of guys growing up, and he was, you know, you could see it in his voice. He was pretty straightforward about this. Jaywon usually is with us, right? He's not. He's kind of not going to miss any
words. Doesn't sugarcoat it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, just to come full circle with that quote too, I asked, you know, what is going on with the receiver room, right? Like, why have they not been able to keep pace with the rest of this offense and production in terms of their play on the field? And he just said, we're just young and we need some kids to just grow up. They're good enough to be recruited well. It's time to be an adult a little bit. That's the word you got to use. You get what you put into it. And then this next part I thought was really interesting because he singled out one player that, again, we expect to be returning, right? Mm-hmm. And he said, that's what you love about Trey. You see what he can do for our offense, having him on the field. Hopefully we can get that kid back healthy this spring, and I think he'll bring some more leadership once we can get him through a full season. Sounds like a pretty ringing endorsement for Trey Wallace.
That aligns with what we heard this week, John, right? Theo Johnson said, you know, coming out of camp, he looked like our number one receiver. But now, toward the end of the game, right, with about 45 seconds left, Harrison Wallace seemingly gets hurt again.
Yes. And lands on that same shoulder, I believe, that he landed on against Indiana.
And so, again, we don't know. Didn't get a chance to talk to him after the game. You know, don't know the extent of that. We probably won't, because at this point, you know, we won't hear from James Franklin for a while. But the way that Sider answered that question, we said, you know, hope we can get this kid healthy. I don't know if that's a direct reflection of this today injury or just kind of the combination of everything in the past that he's played through this year. Could be a little bit of both. I don't know.
Yeah, I think based on the way he answered it, just the context of, you know, how I asked the question and everything, I think it was just a general, like, get him healthy in general, right? Like, I'm sure whatever happened today, they're probably hoping he's going to be ready for spring ball. Jaywon said that in that quote, but. I think the most interesting thing about everything that we've talked about, all of the quotes that I've just read, everything that's been said, is the praise that's not being directed toward certain guys, right? Yeah. That Trey Wallace is drawing praise and that's it. Nobody else is drawing praise. There are other veterans in that room and they're not receiving that same level of praise for their production and immaturity, which I think is you don't want to read too much into it because it's not what people said, but I think you can kind of try to read between the lines with some of this. And I think it's going to be interesting moving forward because this is the position that's going to dictate whether, you know, this is a playoff team next year or if this is a playoff team with a chance to really win something.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on with that because we look at the 12-team field next year and we say, okay, well, you figure Penn State should have a really good shot to make that, but can they make any noise once they're in? And I think if you're Andy Kotelnicki and you watch this today, which he did, I mean, we saw him there on the field pregame, saw him after the game. I think if you're watching that, it is, and he knew this, I'm sure, when he took the job, that this receiving core has a lot of deficiencies. And his whole thing is his creativity and, you know, how do you maximize these strengths and minimize the weaknesses? Well, we know what the weakness is, and I think the difference this offseason, well, two differences, right? You've got a different offensive coordinator, but also you've got to do something different with the portal. And I think it's, yes, everybody's trying to add guys and Penn State needs to, but you were supposed to hit that slam dunk with Dante Cephas and you couldn't get him here on time, right? So that was a problem. But then whatever transpired this week that they couldn't get him on the field, that's who knows what. But on top of that,
or over the last 3 weeks, whatever it was, which, by the way, yeah, a little bit of mixed messaging on why this happened. James Franklin essentially said that it was because he got beat out, right? Because there was competition over 3 weeks in practice.
From who? And who beat him out?
I don't know. Well, and here's the thing. If someone is beat out for their spot, that usually doesn't lead to them being dropped entirely from the wide receiver rotation. That is, I don't know. That answer felt misleading to me.
Yeah, it was bizarre, and I think it was just one of the many kind of bizarre developments. I think especially the way this game started for Penn State, you see them coming down, running the ball with so much success. In my head, I'm thinking, yes, this is going to be the Nick Singleton game. Catron Allen had a really nice first half. And then once they fell behind, they don't have a receiving core that could keep pace, and it showed up. And, you know, one of the quotes that Jaywan Sider had was, you know, because when he was asked about Cephas by you, and he was saying, like, yeah, like, it's frustrating as a play caller when you don't have that guy because you just don't have answers on the outside and it limits what you can do. And so I think that was a really big part of the offense. If you're looking
for the timing of it, too, yeah. By the way, I was going to say, I had also asked, like, when he knew, and they said, well, he was in the game plan. Like, they had, but they also knew that they weren't going to have him, right? So I don't know. He didn't necessarily make it clear when they knew that Cephas wasn't going to be a part of the game, but I think the way to characterize Jaywan's mood with, you know, and when I was asking him the questions, he was frustrated, right? He was frustrated, not with the questions, but with the
could have been the questions. You don't know. Could have been you, John.
Yeah, but no. Jaywan's always great with us. But yeah, he was honest. Like I said, right? Like he said that he was saying what he was feeling, and he was frustrated that a guy that they clearly wanted to involve in the offense wasn't going to be playing. And, you know, they said he said that it's a collaborative decision, but they defer to Hagans. Hagans said it's a collaborative decision. He looked like he was going to say more, but then kind of didn't elaborate on that. But, you know, whoever's decision it is, they all know, they all collaborate. They did agree on that part of it. So, yeah, whatever happened, like, clearly messed up their game plan or what they intended to do.
Now, Dante Cephas not playing is not why Penn State lost this game. No. There are many ways. But
it does really change things, though. Like,
oh, for
sure. Because it takes your one, I don't know, maybe two competent receivers, Wallace being the other, like, mm-hmm. the two guys that have been good for you this season for extended stretches, Cephas the last three or four games, Wallace when he's been healthy, essentially. And it takes them out. And now you go from guy you trust to, you're rotating in Liam Clifford, you're rotating in Malik Mega and Malik McLean, and Keandre Lambert-Smith has been inconsistent all season. Those guys have to play more. Maybe it doesn't change the outcome, but I think it definitely, it all feels differently, right? It feels like if Cephas and Wallace go out there and they both put up stat lines similar to what Wallace did, we're probably not fretting as much about the receivers. We're talking about how a potential addition is like, okay, you've got those two, and then you get one more, and then you've got three that you can really trust. Now it's like, clearly you can't trust Cephas because of this, right? He had a month to not do this, right? To not allow this to happen. And it happened. And so I think they kind of have to add two now, no matter what.
Yeah, they need immediate help. And I think if you are a wide receiver by the name of Mr. Julian Fleming and you watched this game today, come on down. The job is yours. You can be Penn State's number one wide receiver. Now, I also think there's less appeal with that job than there was back in August, right? I mean, now, yes, the offense is changing. As of 9:40 p.m. on December 30th, as we sit here recording this in Atlanta, the co-interim OC era is over. Penn State is moving on, moving even further away from the Mike Yurcich era, the Mike Yurcich offense. So I think you got to feel optimistic about that. If you're a Penn State fan, you have to have some level of optimism there. But Drew Aller did not look great. And that's been the other kind of theme this year. Now, the interception, I want to start here. We'll dig deeper because I can see you're getting ready to, you're getting riled up, John. You're getting get defensive about the quarterback. The interception, deep ball, I believe it was intended for Amari Evans. Aller get pressure on him, gets hit, ball floats, leads to a viral moment in the stands. Yes. Which I will shout out my colleague, Justin Williams, who's been down here in Atlanta with us, kind of covering the Ole Miss side of things. And as soon as this happens, we see this woman who gives a very viral, very on-brand reaction to, I think, what the fans, what we were all thinking, you know, reporters watching this. It's kind of like, what in the world was that throw? So kudos to Justin for going over.
Didn't exactly say in the world.
Yes. Going over, finding the person who turned out to be a player's parents on the Penn State team. So that story is up at The Athletic. It's really a humorous, kind of lighthearted story that transpired during the game. Recommend you check that out. But the ball hangs in the air. Bizarre looking pick for a guy who only had two interceptions this year. We just haven't seen much of that.
Yeah, I think, you know, his second career interception isn't all that different from the first one, right? He kind of took a shot maybe when he shouldn't have. And this one was, I couldn't tell. I think he pretty clearly couldn't finish the throw, right? Like he couldn't follow through because his arm got hit, which is going to impact it. Even if that was the case, Amari Evans was not open and that's not a pass worth throwing. Right? That's a bad decision and a bad throw by Drew Aller. Where I keep coming back to is how difficult it is. I've watched pretty much every game, I think, other than I think UMass, which I mean, come on all 22 this year. And it's just really difficult to evaluate him, which is a really bad sign, by the way, for the offense, right? Because you have someone that is supposed to be that generational type quarterback and you wasted a year and you wasted it so badly that when you go back and rewatch things, it's tough to evaluate if he's getting better, if he's getting worse, how much is his fault? Because when these defenses we saw it against Ohio State are forced to back off and like those gaps in the defense open up, he hits guys, right? Like he completes passes when they're open. When guys get separation, he completes passes. Now, obviously that's only happening because the coverage is backing off, but I think it's also an indication that he's capable of doing that, right? Like it's not like he came in games last year and people had questions about his accuracy or anything like that. Like he came in games last year when they had better receivers and he played well. And so I it's really hard for me to parse through how much is Drew Aller, who has not been as good as I think a lot of us thought he would be, but how much of it is on him and how much of it is on the receivers? I think we safely say a lot of it's on Yurcich, frankly, at this point, a lot of what happened in the first 10 games, at least. And it's hard to like, appropriately allocate blame. I think I've talked about that on here before. It's just one of those things that's not going to change until they have a real receiver, right? Like until they have real receivers, multiple receivers that he can get the ball to. And that kind of sucks, right? Like you're going into massive 24 season and you have no idea what you have at quarterback because you wasted his first year as a starter and didn't even give him enough of a receiver core to evaluate him properly, let alone decide, you know what I mean, if this is the guy you want to move on with going forward, which I assume they will, as I think is clearly the correct decision.
Are you trying to stir up a quarterback controversy, John? Because you know every spot's always up for grabs every year.
Yeah, right. Of course they are. I saw that from some people after Bo Probula completed one pass and then he airmailed the backward pass. And it's one of those things though where I think people question whether or not Drew Aller is the guy or should be the guy. And I don't know the answer to that, but I don't think you can know the answer to that, I guess is my broader point, right? Like I don't think anyone can come to a finite conclusion on that based on what we saw. I don't know that he is. I really don't, because this hasn't been good enough this year. But frankly, I don't think you can make any judgment, and that's an indictment of the program, and it is something that can really set them back, because if you go into next season and you find out, okay, you've got receivers, maybe you go get Fleming, right? Maybe you go get someone else in the portal. You have four guys you trust now, right? And suddenly you have that core, and you find out by like game two or three that he's not the guy. Well, now what? Because you can't go get someone. It's too late at that point. It's him and Bo Prabula. I think he's better than Bo Prabula. And you're kind of stuck in this massive year. And so they needed to be able to evaluate what they had at the very least. Frankly, they should have been much better, because they should have put him in a better position to succeed and the rest of the offense in a better position to succeed. But they didn't, and now they're stuck.
Yeah, and I did. I had a chance to chat with Danny O'Brien after the game. We briefly talked, and I talked about the pick and kind of how things went for him this year. I'll tell you what, because he's someone who we do not hear from often, very upbeat guy. You know, he said his message to Drew after the game and to Bo was, hey, you know, stay positive. It's one performance. You know, it's just you got to kind of flush it and move on. And but I am curious, again, we've got this new structure coming up where you're going to have Andy Kotelnicki, you're going to have Danny O'Brien, you're going to have James Franklin all working with these quarterbacks throughout the entire offseason. That's interesting. And when we talked to Drew ahead of the game this week, he said he's excited for it, for that collaboration. He's looking forward to it. But I'm with you, John. I really have no idea what they have. Coming into this year, I thought he was going to be one of the top five, top 10 quarterbacks in college football. I have no idea now. And I think so much of that is the offensive line. It's that receiving core. We saw today, right? Without Olu Fashanu, Drew Shelton got the start at left tackle. That's your left tackle next year. You're going to have a new center next year, right? Presumably it's Nick Dawkins, because Hunter Norzad will be moving on. Right tackle, Caden Wallace didn't play in the second half today, so you saw Anthony Danka get a lot of reps. So you're going to have a lot of moving pieces there, and that's going to impact stuff too. I mean, we can look at this year and say, yes, the receiving core has been an issue, and it's been a massive issue, red flag, whatever you want to call it. But this offensive line next year is going to skew younger. And yes, they've recruited really well. And yes, you know, you've gotten guys like Nick Dawkins has seemingly been here for forever, but he doesn't have that game experience. He doesn't have that big moment experience. There's going to be that inevitable transition. And oh yeah, this is the junior year for Drew Aller, for Nick Singleton, for Katron Allen, for Abdul Carter,
the whole class
playing on seemingly, it felt like one leg at points today.
Which, by the way, did you see the replay of that hit?
I caught part of it. It looked like a pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. Yeah. Like, listen, I'm not doing. They did not lose because of the refs. Frankly, the refs probably skewed even the entire game, given some of the missed calls, especially that essentially Ole Miss had a touchdown taken off the board because the refs made two mistakes. But like, it's not a good play. Like, that is not something that should be. It should be flagged pretty quickly. I'll put it that way. But no, like that's it, right? Like that's the whole class. And a lot of those guys might leave after next year if they're playing as well as they're continuing to play, or they continue to play as well as they're currently playing. And you have to capitalize on that. And you mentioned the offensive line. I tend to think it'll be good still. I don't know if it'll be as good as this year, but I think it'll be a plus. But you're right. It's younger. Doesn't necessarily mean bad. Doesn't necessarily mean good, but it's younger and it's more of a question mark. And so you go into next season with these question marks at all these spots. And, you know, I talked about before the game, like if Penn State loses this game and the young guys look really good, that's better than them winning the game and the veterans like making the plays. Neither of those things happened. They lost the game and a lot of the young guys really struggled. Right. And not even like it's not their fault. Like Zion Tracy had a tough go of it out there, but he is competitive and there were reps that he won too. Like he didn't lose every rep, but he's a freshman. Like we'd expect that to happen. Same with Elliott Washington. Yeah. Cam Miller, I actually thought was pretty good. I don't know if people understand how good Trey Harris is. Like he is a legit
very, very good
talent at receiver. But I just think like that Cam Miller is, he was competitive in those spots and that's what you wanted to see, right? Right before he's about to take over next year. Same with a lot of those young guys. You know, you go into next year with so many question marks and wide receiver should not be one of them because it should be an older position. But instead, it's probably going to be one that has a lot of turnover. And now you don't know what you have whatsoever. Offensive line going to be a lot of turnover. They don't know what they have because of that. They don't know what they have at quarterback when they think it should be good. And it's question after question after question.
This is like, turning into a real downer.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's true. Though,
listen, yeah, I, like it's one of those things where, like I said, the way this game played out was going to matter much more than the result. And the way it played out was not a positive sign for 2024.
No, I'm with you. Yeah, this was like the probably worst or close to worst case scenario, right? Where they just did not look competitive. And yes, and here, I guess I'll say it. This I thought was odd. It bothers me. I get it. It's 2023. This is the norm. But all of the messaging leading up to this game was that captains play, guys don't opt out. Let me put it out there. I do not care if someone opts out.
Right.
These guys have given a hell of a lot to Penn State football. I am 100% on board with protecting their health, their safety, whatever they feel like is in their best interest.
Their financial future, all of that.
Yes. Like all of that, go for it. I am all fully supportive of what the player wants to do. But where I think it gets weird is when the messaging is all, oh, these guys are here. This guy's committed to playing. We have a plan for this guy, all these things. But at the end of the day, you had a lot of opt-outs. And Penn State can say, oh, well, Chop Robinson opted out. Well, yeah, ultimately, so did Johnny Dixon. Ultimately, so did Kalen King. Ultimately, so did Olu Fashanu. Like, all these guys, yes, it was great that they were here, that they were at the bowl site, and, you know, James Franklin probably does that for the competitive advantage aspect of it, but at the end of the day, you had a lot of opt-outs, and that's not a indictment on your program, that's not a red flag, that's the reality of the situation, but don't come out here and say that it's different here, we don't do it that way, because the same thing happened here, right? And yes, it was great for Adisa Isaac to play a half and, you know, get out of there presumably healthy. I mean, I saw him briefly in the locker room. I believe he was taking a selfie with Caden Wallace. So two guys were moving on. Pretty nice moment for them, despite the way today went. But yeah, to me, I just the messaging, and I know I heard from some fans pregame on Twitter that they were like complaining at us as reporters. And why did you guys write this? And I'm like, this is what everyone kept saying. And we kept cautioning people and saying, well, we don't know how many snaps guys are going to play. But yeah, don't play the whole, it's different here. Guys don't opt out here. They play here because you had four opt outs, which, yes, that's also a credit to the fact that you've got four guys who are going to be selected relatively early on in the NFL draft.
Three.
Well, yeah, true. And so on top of that, I did ask Terry Smith about Johnny Dixon because this is the first that we had it officially confirmed from Friday to Saturday that he wouldn't be here. And I said, were you surprised that Johnny Dixon went this route where he hasn't even been around the team for like the last month? And he's like, you know, I'm not going to really fault any guy for whatever decision he makes. I'm paraphrasing here. But, you know, Johnny Dixon was still here long enough to help us become the number one defense in the country. And like, so he's grateful for that, right? Which is a really good, I think, and measured response. But yeah, at the end of the day, I just thought that the whole messaging thing was odd, and especially in hindsight, because that's what happens in this sport. And Anthony Poindexter even said, right. I talked with him after the game and he's like, yeah, it's 2023. Like it is what it is, you know, and that's just the new era of college football that we're in.
Well, and it's better for the health of the program in 2024 that those young guys get reps. I said it on the pregame pod. It remains true. And I don't like it. Yes, it harmed the result in this game. Zion Tracy should be better for having those reps. Mm-hmm. Cam Miller should be better for having those reps. Elliott Washington should be better for having those reps. Same with Tony Rojas, right? Like, and Curtis Jacobs didn't play as much. Same with Tyler Warren had a chance to break out, right? Like these, all of these things happen because those guys are kind of passing the baton on to the next stars, right? The next group of guys that they're going to rely on to be hefty pieces of the defense and of the offense. And now they kind of have that experience heading into a really important offseason. So I don't know that some of the quotes from James after the game, I thought were really interesting about the opt-outs and like saying, I don't know, it seemed like there was some thinly veiled stuff there, but I just think like this is better for the program that they are getting guys ready for next year. Right. This is, I said it before. I'll say it again. No one's going to care had they won or lost the Peach Bowl in 3 days because the season's already over. They're going to be thinking about next season. So why we're talking about next season, right? So why you and I wrote about next season. I don't know if I plugged that already, by the way. You can find my my story on the wide receiver room and the kind of cause for concern there with, you know, you mentioned I talked to Marcus Higgins, Jaywan Sider, you know, about that. You find that at centerdaily.com. You wrote a column as well over at theathletic.com. But again, we're spinning it forward, right? Because that's what this is. This was this was not so much the end of the 23 season as the beginning of the 24 season, the beginning of looking at the 24 season. And I think in an ideal world, you would see more out of those guys. But at the end of the day, they got the reps, and that is going to be really important too. And I know we were very negative about the receivers. Well, it's because the guys that'll be back next year or could be back next year weren't great or didn't play, and that is not good.
I will say the Tyler Warren thing, that's like, if you're looking for some positives from today, Tyler Warren stuffed the stat sheet with the 75-yard ill-advised Drew Aller throw that he turns into 74 yards of yak.
It was a tipped pass too, by the way. A tipped pass. If you listen, I know that every stat counts, but like, if we take out this one crazy play, it's four catches for 52 yards, which is probably more in line with something we'd expect. But yeah, I think Tyler Warren was really good today either way.
Look at the rest of it, John. Grasping at straws here. Nicholas Singleton was targeted 5 times, 4 receptions for 86 yards. He had the touchdown, the 48-yard reception. That's something, you know, we heard so much about it last offseason. Nick Singleton said as much this week. That pass-catching element is something he's going to continue to work on, and it's imperative that he does and that this offense utilizes him that way. But a Penn State wide receiver did not catch a pass until there's about 13 and a half minutes left in the game. So you talk about, and yes, some of that is game flow. Some of that is inefficiency with the offense. It's getting your tight end involved, your running backs. But still, that's a pretty bad, pretty strong indicator of where things stand with those guys. I'm looking at it now because it's in front of me. Liam Clifford catches a pass. Theo Johnson, right? His last game as Nittany Lion. Khalil Dinkins gets involved, which, again, you talk about skewing younger. 2024, that's your number two tight end, most likely.
Before you say the next thing, and I think I know what you're going to say, can I hit you with my favorite stat of the game?
You do it.
Drew Aller completed more passes to Drew Aller than he did to Keandre Lambert-Smith.
Oof.
And Dante Cephas. Harsh. Combined.
Harsh.
It's true. Cephas doesn't play. Lambert-Smith doesn't catch a pass. One pass gets tipped into the air. Drew Aller catches it for a 10-yard gain.
Bizarre. Just bizarre game. All around from the offense. I see Trey Potts here on the stat sheet. Colleague Johnny McGonigal talked with Trey Potts in the locker room afterward. And I believe the response is basically that he's kind of still working through some things on his future.
So I actually asked Jay Onesider about this too.
Okay.
And he said that he hadn't made the decision yet, but made it clear that they want him back, right? Like if he goes, it's not going to be like a Penn State decision. That Penn State wants Trey Potts back, but it's kind of balls on his court and whatever he wants to do there. I think it would do good to have him back. I mean, we're
it's
not going to go
of
to
running
the minutiae
backs,
of the game.
But it is a young, it's still, and I think too, the leadership piece, right?
Yeah.
Catron Allen and Nick Singleton are not those vocal guys.
The plays that Trey Potts was in for at the end of the first half, some incredibly horrendous game management by first James Franklin and then Lane Kiffin. So it didn't matter. They both screwed it up so bad that none of it mattered. But just the last like minute and a half of the first half, like, had me pulling my hair out from a game management perspective. Again, we're not going to get into the minutiae of the game. I just needed to get that out there because it was frustrating.
Get that off your chest, John. Get it out there.
One more receiver stat real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
Do you know who was third in yards after catch? That looking?
Well, I know that Tyler Warren had to be one.
Right.
Singleton two, because the touchdown, but three. Gosh, Liam Clifford, maybe
Drew Aller.
God,
on that 10-yard reception on that 10-yard reception, he had a 60. He had 16 yards after the catch. But yeah, like again, all of these stats, like they seem mean, but like they're all true, and I think they're an indictment of where the wide receiver room is at right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing I appreciate about Marcus Haggins too is that he's upfront about it. He understands. Yes. And I think a lot of it is coming into this year. He was dealt this deck, right? Like he didn't have, these are not his guys that he recruited. This is the hand that he was dealt, and he's just kind of working with it and rolling with it. And that's all you can do. So I think we're going to learn more about him in terms of how he develops talent this offseason. I think it's a really critical offseason for him with what he has. But quite frankly, right now, the talent in that room is not good enough, and it is not good enough for a top 15 roster. It is not good enough to make a college football playoff run. And unless something drastically changes, whether you bring in some talented guys, whether you know, Harrison Wallace becomes that big time guy, whether Keandre Lambert-Smith decides to stay and improves, you're going to be looking at the same situation, right? And that to me has to be the frustrating thing for Penn State fans, because we're going to go into another offseason. And I hate to say it, because we just did this writing and talking all about the wide receivers. We're going to be doing it again because it is that big of a storyline. It's where we're at between now and late August. Get ready to hear a lot about it. Yeah, it was a weird, inefficient day for the offense. I did want to ask, though, John, when we saw Penn State down around the goal line early in the game, we didn't see the T formation. Has the T formation gone out of the picture with Mike Yurcich?
I think it's kind of run its course, right? I think it became kind of too obvious, right? They didn't have enough wrinkles off it, which is another discussion that we could have. But I think it was too clear what they were doing out of it every time. And so they probably ditched it for that reason, is my guess. I thought they got away from running the ball too early on that first drive, which is not a thing that you usually ever catch me saying. Like, I'm very much...
Well, especially not the narrative of this year, right? It was the bats didn't get going, and yeah.
I'm very much team throw the ball when you can, because it's just a more efficient way to play offense. But especially on that first drive, they should have just tried to ram it in, and they made no efforts to do that. One more game management thing, by the way, James Franklin was asked about this as well. Not going for it on 4th and 1 in his own territory, and then Ole Miss immediately responding with a touchdown. That's when the game ended.
Yep.
That's it. That's when the game ended. And if you want to look to point to one decision, one thing, it was that, because Ole Miss was going for it on the times they should have gone for it. Penn State did go for it once on 4th down and converted it early in the game. I remember it. I honestly don't remember how many times.
Theo Johnson touchdown.
Yes, the Theo Johnson touchdown, because they flipped fields right before that, right?
Like, yes, because they were coming our way, and then they were all the way down.
And so, like, They converted that one, but to me, they were 1 for 2 for the game. To me, you absolutely have to go for it there. And here's the thing. Your offensive line is playing really well, especially up the middle. I thought the 3 interior guys were playing at a really high level. You're running the ball well, and your quarterback is 6'5", 245, whatever Drew Aller's at. He's going to get that first down if you sneak it, or if you tush-push.
Tush-push,
right? Like, this is a not a given, but like, it's a high-probability play, and they just didn't do it. And like, to me, that's how you lose games, right? That's how head coaches lose games. Everyone wants to blame James Franklin for everything. Most of the time, it's other stuff that's going wrong, right? That is causing the problems. That is his decision, and he made that mistake that cost them the chance to win this game, or the chance to at least stay in the game.
And my thinking was, and I tweeted this ahead of the Theo Johnson play, and I said, you know what? Regardless of what happens here, like, this is the right decision, because in my head, you were coming into today knowing that you were short-handed.
Gotta score.
Like, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, we don't see how it's really going to hold up with our second. I'll be honest, I thought the secondary would be better than it was. So I was taken aback by that a little bit.
Well,
but
I think
some of the plays they made, too, were just ridiculously good. Like, there was that.
But I think we thought Daquan Hardy would be better, if we're being honest. Like, there were
– Yeah.
It was not a banner day for Daquan Hardy. And by the way, people want to talk about, like, well, playing in the game can help your stock. I'm not saying this game is going to hurt Daquan Hardy's stock, but he was not good on the outside. The one touchdown was entirely his fault. It was an RPO with a coverage bust where he committed to the RPO action underneath, right? And then the tight end leaks out behind him, and he's wide open for a touchdown. And that's on him, right? Like, that's like I said, it's a coverage bust that can't happen. And that's not, you know what I mean? That's not something you'd expect from someone that's been playing at an elite level all season, like a legitimately elite level all season.
And you know, John, you know, when I realized that this was just going to be like that day for Penn State where it's like nothing goes right, when the Alex Falcons field goal gets blocked, I was like, okay, well, each phase has their problems. Falcons had been tremendous this year, right? So like, you see that. But yeah, the block was just pretty wild. I think too, when you kind of, again, like, I think we're looking at the lens of 2024, which is the right thing to do, especially with a game like this. Who are the leaders on this team next year? Because I think that's the other part of this. And I know every year that's the thing in college football, and they had a massive void this year and Theo Johnson helped fill it. Devon Elise said earlier in the week he'd have a decision after the game. I haven't seen anything yet, unless it's happened while we're recording.
I was going to say there's like a 35% chance that did.
Because he is a vocal guy. He's one of those leaders. But again, do not know if he's going to be here. And then on top of that, you look at it and you say, okay, well, Drew Aller isn't really that vocal presence. He's going to have to be, and I think he's going to continue to grow into that role. The running backs, both of those guys are not that. Ka'Tron Allen, Nick Singleton, that's not them. So I don't know. I mean, I know we heard so much about Kobe King and him being that leadership type guy, that captain type material. But yeah, they're going to have a lot of questions. And the other part too, and you know, we were talking a lot about the corners and skewing younger there. You have to remember, Penn State is in the midst of this remarkably good, insanely good run of cornerbacks. At some point, that's going to drop off, even if it's just a little bit, right? You always want to say, yeah, they're going to reload. And I still think they have a ton of talent in that room. And Terry Smith has done more than enough to show that he is a tremendous coach and he gets his guys ready to play. But I mean, the level with which, you know, that run that they're on right now, and you look at the safeties before that, with Brisker and J.R. Brown, like at some point, the secondary, I think, is going to kind of maybe hit the ceiling and bounce back down a little bit. And it just feels like that might be where next season is potentially with these corners. Again, long term, I still think they're in really good shape. But it's not going to be like this year, right, where you have two really, really good corners. I don't think, unless one of these guys comes out of nowhere and surprises me, which is plausible for sure. I think Cam Miller's going to be really good. But still, that's going to be a pretty significant jump to make.
I was just going to say that. I think Cam Miller's going to make that leap. I think Cam Miller has a chance to be like an all Big Ten level cornerback next year. I think Washington and Tracy are going to be like mm-hmm. we saw, right? Like, I think that's maybe the questionable spot. But if you hit on one of those guys, I don't think it's that much of an issue. Davian Collins, if he's ready, if he's added enough weight and strength to kind mm-hmm. of play on the outside. I actually think their coverage could be really interesting next year with Tom Allen. I've mentioned before the disguises mm-hmm. and stuff that he'll do on the back end that, you know, these guys are going to be put in position to succeed quite a bit. I think safety might be the best spot on the defense next year. I think KJ Winston, mm-hmm. Zaki Wheatley, and King Mac. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Winston and Mac are the two starters next year, and we're talking about like two all Big Ten caliber guys mm-hmm. in that spot, or those spots, I should say. And you can have Mac drop down into the slot, play the nickel. Again, that spot is leaned a little bigger under Tom Allen, but we'll see what he wants to do. Mac is a physical player and can play kind of like a miniature linebacker, right? Like, he can, yeah. he's not afraid to get
physical. Oh yeah. His stature is really, really interesting. Yeah. And what is his terminology for the nickel? Does he call it something different?
Calls it the Husky.
The Husky. That's okay. Yeah. That's yep. the, yeah. yeah. Oh, I'm going to have fun with that one.
Yeah. I know. But you mentioned the leadership thing. We haven't actually, don't think we've heard from Nick Dawkins yet on what his decision will be. Like, if he's coming back, if he's done, you know what I mean?
I think he has to pretty much come back, right? Like, I think
slowly Google this.
I mean, I think he's pretty much, podcast, I mean, it's pretty much like he's going to be the center,
but I think he's at his COVID year at this point.
Is he?
And so like, you know,
are we all at our COVID year at this point, John?
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. But no, I'm pretty sure that he is at the point essentially to be at his COVID year. Never mind, he redshirted technically last season, 2022. So he's 2 years left. Okay. But yeah, which is strange because he did not redshirt the year before in 2021. But no, I think if Nick Dawkins is the starting center, like, there's your voice, right? Like, there's your leader of the team, which is good because that's a massive communicator to that at that spot. You can lead, like, you can have your leader be the center and I think be mm-hmm. really effective. We've seen that in the past. And so I think that's the guy in that spot. If you add Julian Fleming, I think like there's potential for that to be there, despite him coming in for only a year potentially. I think he is a leader. I don't know how vocal he's going to be or anything like that, but there's potential there as someone who's kind of been there, done that a little bit.
He's at least been more in big games and big moments yeah. and big spots.
And is like, we'll do the dirty work too. Is like a good blocker, mm-hmm. so like he can back
earn
it up
respect
with
that way. Yeah,
yeah. And Tyler Warren is not that guy though. Drew Aller's not that guy. Those running backs aren't those guys. The receivers aren't those guys. It's kind of true across the board at this point on offense, defense. I think you're hoping KJ Winston kind of takes over that. Abdul Carter. I just
deny Dennis Sutton. Maybe younger guy, but
I was going to say Winston.
A lot of leadership potential there.
Winston and Dennis Sutton, to me, are the guys that you point to. Zane Durant.
Kobe King.
Guys.
Kobe King.
And Kobe King, right? Like, those. Mm-hmm. So I don't, like, we're finding, it's interesting. I think we're finding answers to the leadership question earlier this year than we were last year.
Yeah.
In large part because a lot of the guys that we're saying were a part of that class that were like, this is the group, right? Like, this is the group of guys that's going to be the next great Penn State team. And so they're finally the veterans, and a lot of them have those voices, right? Deny Dennis Sutton, KJ Winston, Kobe King. Like, these guys are a part of, were a part of a class. Kobe, I think, was a year before, but still, like, they were part of a group that were a big, supposed to be a big part of the future. And now it's their time to be the future. So I'm actually not as worried about the leadership, worried about corner two and beyond. Yes. Yeah. Not at all worried about safety. You know, I do think the pass rush beyond Deny is going to be interesting. We'll see, like, Jameel Lyons.
We saw more today of, Vanover.
Yeah, Zariah Fisher. I thought Fisher looked good. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, but you still need that consistency rep to rep. Like, Adisa Isaac was the best player on the field every single snap he played today. And I think it's getting lost how good he was this year. So there are going to be spots. They're going to try to fill spots that they need to fill, right? Like, this team is not done in the portal. I would be stunned if they're done in the portal.
If they're done in the portal, there's a problem.
If they're done in the portal, then I'll make it the playoff next year.
Yeah, for sure. If you do not
need
a wide
at least
receiver.
A receiver. Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think, too, the other one with the defensive ends, and I have no idea where things stand with him right now, but Smith Vilbert is one that it's easy to kind of forget about because he's been hurt all year since the spring, I guess, but we didn't find out till the summer. So, because he was somebody today, I was looking around the sidelines from up in the press box with my binoculars, and I was like, who is that massive human being down there? And I am like 99% sure it was Smith Vilbert. So I was like, oh, yes, there's another guy to kind of keep tabs on. Also, the specialists, right? Like, that's going to be the other thing. You know, Riley Thompson's back because our longstanding mystery about his eligibility has been solved. He has 2 years remaining. But Alex Falcons was such a good get for this team, and they probably are going to rely on their transfer portal kicker again to be that solution next year, I would think. We did see Sanders Haydeck attempt the onside kick today, which that's when I was reminded, yes, he's here. He's a lefty. But yeah, like you're going to have a lot of transitions. And I think that's the thing too. You think about Daquan Hardy, but also his role on special teams. So who's your punt returner? Does it go back to Caden Saunders as that punt return option? Is there another cornerback who can do it? I don't know, but there's still those decisions out there. Like you mentioned with Trey Potts and some of these other guys that we just don't know yet. Was any Devon Ali's news? We didn't.
Yeah, I've been checking.
So
it's not out there.
So nothing out there yet. So there's still that, right? There's still Keandre Lambert Smith. And there's still other guys on Penn State's own roster that can enter the transfer portal, right? That's the other thing. And again, people enter the portal for various reasons. Sometimes they leave the portal and remain at Penn State. Not often, but it can happen. So, you know, of course we've seen that before. I did want to say, John, I loved the atmosphere today for this game. I thought this was a lot of fun. You know, you never really know with these bowl matchups what you're going to get. And being down here as long as we were, you got to kind of see the level of Penn State fans that traveled and the level of commitment for fans to come to this game. Saw a lot of blue and white kind of throughout the week, especially from, you know, Thursday on. And then Ole Miss, of course, a lot of those folks made the drive more recently yesterday, or some of them even today. They were loud. I mean, that place was rocking from both fan bases. I do think because the Falcons seats are red, the seat backs, it definitely looked like there was much more red there because of the way it was. And they were very, very loud. That's kind of what stood out to me. But what an awesome venue. I mean, that was really a remarkable game. And I was sitting there thinking, and I don't have the answer to this, so I'm just presenting this. When's the last time Penn State played back-to-back games in domes? Because you had the Ford Field game. I have no idea.
I feel like it's probably never.
Never? Probably not.
Because they don't play enough normal road games in domes, right? Because then it almost has to be normal road game and then a bowl.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm going to guess never.
Yeah, usually because you get the land-grant game, then you had the Lucas Oil Stadium game. But, yeah, that wasn't – Ford, of course, was not a dome. I'm really beginning to like these dome games, John. I'm loving them. Yeah, these NFL
venues. It's
nice and
temperate the entire time.
Yeah, you know what you're getting. But this, I mean, especially down at the field level, there was a cool moment. Chop Robinson was there, which, again, we saw Joey Porter do it last year where you knew that these guys were opting out, but they still came to the game, were still with their teammates. Chop was on the sideline the entire game. I kind of had my binoculars on him for a bit. But pregame, he blew a kiss to the fans that were behind. There's like that lower level club type level behind the both sidelines. So, you know, really nice moment for him. Nice moment for those fans. Andy Kotelnicki was over pregame, looked to be taking photos with fans. So I don't know if that speaks to the enthusiasm level or if he knew these people or what it was. But that was going on. But it was interesting for me throughout the game to kind of find Olu Fashanu on the sidelines, to find Kalen King and just wonder, you know, what are those moments like for those guys? Because that had to be really difficult for them to watch. And then, of course, in the second half, Adisa Isaac, Caden Wallace on the sidelines. So, yeah, it was a weird, different game just because of all those moving parts, which is how James Franklin alluded to it afterward. He said between the coordinator changes, the guys who were unavailable, the guys playing limited snaps, that there were just too many moving parts to realistically kind of win this game, which...
I mean, that's true.
It's true.
Right? But the reason for concern aren't that they lost, right? And that's what we just spent the last almost an hour talking.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. There are many, many reasons to unpack from today, and you and I will continue to do that. Yes. I've got stories up on The Athletic. You have stories up on centerdaily.com. We will continue to write here. Gosh, we've got the New Year's Eve coming up quickly upon us. Gosh, it's tomorrow.
I cannot wait on Monday. Mm-hmm. Just sit down and watch football all day. That's it. Don't have to do anything else. Just that.
It's going to be, we say this and then somebody's going to, but here's the thing. There, like at this point, I feel like there are no more coaches who can leave or go or get hired or get an interim or a co-role.
Right. Once we get player decisions, we're good. And the portal closes soon. So.
Yeah. And the semester.
Come on, let's get this thing rolling.
The winter semester starts a week from Monday. So, again, you kind of target that and say if you're getting a portal guy in here and you want him in here for spring ball and for winter workouts, that's got to transpire in like the next 10 days. So we'll be on the lookout for that. Anything else, John, that you'd like to add from our time in Atlanta at the Peach Bowl?
No, I think it has been it's been a lot of fun, right? Like this has been a trip that we both enjoyed a lot. Like you said, we will be back pretty frequently. Mm-hmm. I imagine we will be back sometime in the middle of the week to kind of go over things and kind of put the
path
to grave, so to speak.
Yeah.
on the 2023 season and our overall thoughts and everything. So looking forward to that. There will surely be additions, like we said, for Penn State's sake, there better be. but I think that's a good place to leave it for now. This has been a fun trip down here. You know, you and I will both be heading back tomorrow on New Year's Eve. So looking forward to heading back home. But as you mentioned, you can find all of your work at The Athletic. You can find all of mine at Center Daily Times. Find Audrey on Twitter at @oddsnyder4, me at @JohnSauber. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.